Hello, namaste. Welcome to Mantra, the practice of sacred sound. I am Rebecca Ramadevi Preen, and this workshop is part of my offering Sacred Sound Circle. For those of you who are listening who are not yet members of Sacred Sound Circle, I'll give you more information about that at the end, in case you're interested in joining us, and I would love it if you did. So, mantra, which is the practice of repeating sacred sounds, as in prayer, really, is what we're talking about today. And it's really about the experience of mantra. If that is all you knew and all you had to go on, that would be enough, because mantra, like all of the practices of yoga, it's really about your experience, how you experience it, how it changes your experience, what you learn from it. It's an embodied and experiential practice. And I have found, and I'm finding as I'm working with people directly through mantra, that it has a penetrative power. So in other words, it strikes at the heart of things. It goes to the core, or the cord and the core of things that you might be aware of, but somehow haven't really been able to get a handle on, or have been pushing away, or it seems to be that thing that is the thing that you keep coming back to. You're like, why hasn't this gone yet? So it really does strike at the heart of people's experience and at our desire to be liberated from whatever plagues us, to be happier, to be shiny, kind of shines you from the inside out. And it's the experience of mantra, and in experiencing how it brings things up, allows us to release them, and then creates all this space for stillness and silence and joy and witnessing and beauty. That is really the key piece about mantra. And if that is all you want to know about mantra, then you're good. This workshop will go a little bit behind the scenes as to, okay, what really goes into this? Like, why is this mystery tool? So if you'd like to just stay in the magic, stay in the magic. If you'd like to know a little bit of the science and philosophy and whatnot that's behind the magic, we're going to go into that a little bit today. The other thing we're going to go into is some notes on practicing, okay, answering some common questions about practicing. But first, two important things to know about a mantra practice, since it is experiential overall. First is, you do not have to subscribe to any religion at all to do these practices, or you literally could love all the world's religions, okay? It's not really about religions. I use some terms, and there are names of these sounds and practices that overlap with Hinduism, because yoga and Hinduism both came out of what are called the Vedic scriptures, so a set of works that were written down in the Sanskrit language. Okay, but really the way I'm using it and the way I've been taught and the way I use it in my life, it's really not about religion in the sense of a doctrine or a prescribed set of beliefs. It's a spiritual practice that allows you to deepen your relationship, okay, with yourself and with the divine, however you define that. So if you are of a religious faith, it could certainly go right alongside your faith and deepen it. I know people for whom this is absolutely the case. So again, as I said, it's really about your spirituality and how you embody it so deeply that it guides your life and your work, and so that you get to be happier, right, and enjoy like the marrow, so to speak, of life and of yourself and of your existence. And second, again, speaking to the experiential piece, you don't have to take my word for it. go ahead, experience it, experiment with it. Okay, the mantras are exactly what they do. They're only as effective as your experience, and you don't have to believe anything. I'm going to tell you, again, a bit about the behind the scenes, some science, some medical science even that's been studied and tested, and some Vedic philosophy. And so take that all in, digest it, and come back to your experience, okay, and decide for yourself. So what are we going to cover today? Again, we're going to talk about what's behind sacred sounds and the energies that it uses and that it cultivates. We're going to talk about why mantra works as a mind-quieting and transformative tool. We're going to talk about how the practice of mantra impacts and heals the nervous system. And related to that, we're going to talk about using sacred sound to heal, okay, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Then within that, we're going to talk about really taking care of yourself in your mantra practice. If we're using the sound to heal, right, and to transform, to get shiny from the inside out, then there's a way in which we need to be aware of what's happening, and I'm going to give you some pointers for taking care of yourself. And then we're going to talk about practicalities, the way you chant, the types of chants, practicing more than one mantra a day, that kind of nuts and bolts stuff. Malas, in February, we're going to actually speak to someone who designs malas and works with the energies of the materials that she uses to make malas, whether it's wood or a seed that's called a rudraksha bead, or gemstones that have certain transitive properties. And she's going to be able to tell you all about that and a lot more about using malas. I'm just going to touch upon it briefly when we talk about chanting more than one mantra at a time, because I've gotten questions about that. So let's start at the beginning of this behind the scenes exploration. Mantra, which means mind instrument, is, as you know, if you're here, the repetition of sacred sounds. And it is by far it's probably my favorite, actually. We'll say that. We'll go that far to say it's actually my favorite go-to practice for its power to quiet and focus the mind. And I love Sanskrit mantra in particular because I have a snarky mind, okay? My mind thinks that it knows everything, and it's pretty cynical about stuff, or at least it used to be a little bit cynical. And so my snarky mind, it doesn't contradict or criticize Sanskrit, right? Because it doesn't have a real concept of, like, this means this. That's not the way Sanskrit works. It's not, doesn't work on its meaning. It actually works on its sound itself. So unlike English, where I would be saying, no, I don't believe that. No, I don't believe that. No, I don't believe I'm love, or whatever the mantra is, my mind doesn't do that with a Sanskrit mantra. And so that's why I took to it. So I'd be interested in hearing your experience with that. If you've ever worked with mantras in English, in your native tongue, and you've worked in Sanskrit or you've worked in Hebrew, one of the sacred languages, how that changes, or a language that you don't know, how that changes your experience, and whether it gets your mind to stay out of it a bit more. But beyond that, there's a reason why Sanskrit mantras are more potent and effective than mantras in English. And it literally has to do with the way the Sanskrit language is built and designed, like where it comes from in its origin. Mantras in English, on the one hand, attempt to alter your thoughts by replacing one thought with another thought. Okay, it's more positive, it's more uplifting, you know, I'm feeling down or doubtful of myself, and so I choose an English mantra, I am love, or I am enough. And that has a sort of nice feeling or effect, right? But the mind can also leap in and say, I'm not feeling like enough right now. So it's using the mind to attempt to change the mind's activity. And one thing we know is that that's not really the way the mind works. You cannot change your mind with your mind. You need to use something else that will, it actually uses the plasticity of your brain, but it doesn't use necessarily the intellectual functioning of your mind and all that thought process. So in yoga, we have these practices that access a deeper level of consciousness and use the plasticity of the brain. And Sanskrit mantra is one of those. It's a shortcut even for that. And Sanskrit, I mentioned that it doesn't have to do with its meaning. It has to do with its sound, essentially, because it's a vibrational language where the vibration itself is the meaning. And each vibration that comes through in the sound is an aspect of the divine. Each aspect is used to awaken consciousness within us and harmonize us to that divine vibration. So sound in general, and Sanskrit in particular, has a deeply harmonizing effect on matter, and that includes us. There's a study of the impact of sound on matter, and the name of that science is cymatics. So as early as the 1960s, a Swiss scientist named Hans Jenny created an instrument called the tonoscope that showed the impact of vibration on the human voice. Okay, so the impact of the vibration of the human voice, on different pieces of matter. He tested it on sand, he tested it on water, he tested it on metal filings. And he studied the vibration of the sacred languages of Sanskrit and Hebrew. And what he found is that they have specific structural effects on matter that common languages like English do not. The sound om, for example, creates concentric ellipses. Okay, so Sanskrit operates at this vibrational level, the level of all consciousness, and it is designed to do so in a way that our everyday languages are not. When you chant, you attune the vibration of yourself to that aspect of the divine. So again, why is this? Because Sanskrit originated that way. It originated from people listening in deep meditation, and then creating the sounds to replicate what they heard. This isn't foreign to us. It sounds odd, but it actually isn't foreign to us. And there's a name. I mean, we know it. You probably know it from elementary school or junior high. It's onomatopoeia. Right? Remember onomatopoeia, where it's like, oh, the word sounds like it means. That's what onomatopoeia is. And we have examples of that in English. I just read something, and he was talking about, you know, how a car crash has a sequence of sounds that you would hear outside your window. And some of those sound like the sound, like screech of a tire, crash even. So this is not completely foreign to us. Our languages do operate that way. We do create the sound of the word or the sound to describe the meaning. And if the meaning is the sound, then the word often ends up sounding like the sound. And that is exactly what both Sanskrit and Hebrew have done. They come from a place of deep listening and creating sounds that can be vocalized that replicate what was heard during sacred practice, during meditation. So that's what is delivered to us through each of these mantras. And I'll say it again, when you chant, you attune to the vibration of that aspect. Okay, each of these energetic vibrations or aspects of the divine has a name. In Sacred Sound Circle, we'll be working with those aspects that are in harmony with each season. And this is as an exploration of natural and divine rhythm and wisdom. So we've got a rhythm of sound, within the rhythm of the year. And we're trying to understand that rhythm and what it has to teach us. And we're using sound as a way to connect and understand that wisdom and embody it even. We're going to talk a little bit about the physical aspects of mantra in a moment. But back to the names. If any of the names of these mantras feel in sacred sound circle, feel foreign to you or weird or uncomfortable, you know, think about the aspect. You can replace the name itself with what resonates as a quality of the season that you want to cultivate. That may be balance or stillness, flow or love. It is truly the aspect of the energy that matters. The sound is merely a representation. Okay, that is the sound that the energy makes, close as we can vocalize it. So, why does mantra work? The first reason is because of the nature of sound generally and the nature of Sanskrit specifically, right, that we just talked about. Sanskrit and Hebrew, they're both constructed with sounds that evoke these movements of energy. And each of these sounds resonates with and in different parts of the body. And we'll talk a bit more about that when we explore using mantra to heal. There's a couple ways to connect that up. But the second reason, which are actually reasons two and three, are actually physiological and psychological. Okay, mantra, as I mentioned before, uses the plasticity of the brain. And studies conducted using EEG, which charts sound activity and its impulse, charts brain activity. Those studies have charted changes in brain wave frequency while chanting. The brain wave frequency changes and it actually harmonizes. So it will slow down to something that is calming on the body or indicates that the body has calmed. Mantra also has a physical and psychological impact on the nervous system. And this is in large part because it is rhythmic. One part of the practice is sound. We've talked a lot about that. The other side of the practice is breath. Right? You have to take a breath in order to vocalize any sound. So equally important in a mantra practice or equally as impactful in your mantra practice is the breath. The breath and the sound, the same two sides of the same practice. And with equal weight and with equal impact. And practicing mantra creates a rhythm between breath and speech that has a therapeutic effect on the nervous system. No one has to tell us this. We can experience its calming or even sometimes lulling effect. And we may even experience an increase in joy or wellness, just even at the very fact of singing or chanting, or at the completion of our practice, we notice that there was an increase in our wellness. So we experience it, but what's happening in the body? So this is just a very brief, really non-scientific overview. Mantra releases melatonin, which is that feel-good chemical in the brain. Or a relaxing chemical in the brain. Melatonin is related to sleep and to relaxation response. And mantra has an impact on breathing and heart rate. Again, two things that indicate whether we are agitated or whether we are calm. And researchers studying mantra found that it slows your breath to about 6 breaths per minute. And that rate of 6 breaths per minute is what is considered therapeutic. Okay, so when they work with heart patients and they're trying to reduce stress or get the heart workout down, they do exercises to reduce the patient's breath to around 6 breaths per minute, because that's when the heart gets fully oxygenated and the body is in a relaxed state. So the practice of mantra actually does this for you by itself. And the practice of mantra works at all of these levels, spiritually, psychologically, and physically, or physiologically, all at the same time. And you may be aware of some, and you may not be aware of others, which is why it's important today for us to talk about some ways of taking care of yourself and bringing awareness to how you are as you go along in your practice, because there are things happening with the mantra on multiple levels. So we'll talk about that in a minute, ways of taking care of yourself. But how would you use the practice of mantra then deliberately or intentionally, I would say, to heal? And so I offer two primary approaches to this. One, chant a mantra that harmonizes a disruption in your vibration or harmonizes you. So one, that's the idea with the personal mantras that I offered at the end of this last year. I listened for people's vibration, and what I heard was discrepancies from their kind of natural resting state or deepest state, highest state vibration, and what was going on currently. One way for you to understand that is to tap into what you want more of. And I mean something that comes kind of from the center of your heart desire, not necessarily a achievement-oriented or from the mind desire. Okay, so if you want more, if you're feeling called really to more balance or more groundedness, okay, then you would choose a mantra that resonates with those energetic qualities. That's one way to approach using mantra to heal intentionally. The second way is to chant a mantra that harmonizes a chakra. The chakras are energy centers in the body, and there are hundreds of them. The main 7 that we talk about in the West or are familiar with rise up the spine from the tailbone to the top of the head. And that is really a fairly effective shortcut way of thinking about kind of what's going on. So if you understand in the chakras what is related to your experience, so say you're feeling ungrounded or you're having trouble with routine or you can't seem to get, a grip with your health or with money, something very physical world oriented, the chakra for that would be the first chakra. And so you could work with a mantra that actually works with the energy and healing the energy or harmonizing the energy in the first chakra. So that's the second approach to healing intentionally. And the two approaches are not unrelated. So, for example, a Ganesha mantra, which is the energy of groundedness and clarity and is known for being the remover of obstacles in our path, that energy is very much an energy of the first chakra. I mean, it's said that Ganesha sits at the base of the spine. And that first chakra, as I said, is concerned with our issues of survival and stability in the world. And so you can see how the two are related. So it's not like an either-or kind of thing. All of this is very integrative. And as I mentioned earlier, the mantra itself works at every level of your being. So it offers healing and harmonizing at every level of your being simultaneously. And back to what I started with, that it has a way of getting at the untouchable thing, that place that won't heal, or that pattern that you keep repeating and it baffles you because you just can't get at it. Mantra can and will touch that inevitably, right? If you allow it to. It has this penetrative ability to strike at the core of things. And you don't have to even be aware of the specifics of that. I know sometimes I get wrapped up in knowing, like wanting to know, like wanting to unwind things and to understand them, and like I want to know. But that's not always the case that that's possible, and it's not always actually necessary. Okay, you'll understand what you need to understand if your mind needs to understand something to unwind a pattern. That understanding or that wisdom will come through to you. But the rest, it may not. It may be that you don't need to have that intellectual understanding to let go or to heal. Okay, and that's all right. It's still working. I recommend that you bring the fact of that into your awareness. Like simply reminding yourself, even if you're not feeling anything or experiencing anything right that moment, that the mantra is working. Also bring into your awareness touching in with yourself, okay? Touching base with yourself periodically. Because it functions on these multiple levels, the practice of mantra will kick things up. And I invite you to be aware of that. Allow yourself a time and a space to process what appears. Just ask your practice directly to transform it. Breathe the experience in and breathe it out until it passes. When it passes, it will reveal something else underneath, right? Which may be where the wisdom or the aha moment or that, oh, that's what I've been missing, peace comes in. And so breathe that in and breathe that out. Okay, allow yourself to let it go. Allow yourself, again, the time and the space to have this move through you. Okay, any or all of these things can be done by asking. For example, please let me release this as you enter your daily practice. And also, be aware that you are moving spiritual energy through your entire system and your entire body. Okay, you're not just chanting with your mouth and your voice and your lungs. The chanting has a physical impact like any other activity during your day. So I recommend that you move your body, get enough sleep, stay hydrated. Okay, you want to keep open. The sound is going to be opening up your awareness, helping you open your body, so give it some help. And give it some support by taking good care of yourself through sleep and water. And generally be conscious of your physical as well as your emotional and spiritual experience. Okay, just that awareness alone sometimes can shift it. Or allow you to place something new on the mantra or in the mantra practice to transform. And please, if you're struggling or you're really triggered, reach out, because there are some things that you may need additional support for, and let's be sure that you have that for yourself. Okay. Let's talk about the practice of mantra, okay, the actual dynamics of the practice. In Sacred Sound Circle, we will practice two types of mantra, sung and spoken. the mantras we did in Into the Void, right, my free sacred sound journey honoring the winter solstice that just passed, those mantras were sung. And most of the seasonal mantras we'll practice in sacred song, sacred sound, sea song, circle, are sung. When they're sung, they are chanted with an inflection on the second to last syllable of the name of the divine energy. Okay, so Om Shri Maha Lakshmiye Swaha. I know you don't know that one yet, but as an example, that would be that spoken. Om Shri Maha Lakshmiye Swaha. But chanted, it sounds like this. Om Shri Mahalakshmi Swaha. So you can see that there's an inflection, kind of like it's almost like there's this S curve to the sound of the mantra. This is how I was taught, and so it's how I practice. And what I was taught is that this inflection reaches up, okay, with our voice, toward that energy, toward the divine energy, and that it also draws our heart upward, creates a lightness in the practice. And I've done my best to be true to this in the mantra recordings that I create and offer to you. But also, I want to be aware and share with you that the mantra recording has been influenced by my heart and years of practice. And so it has the characteristics of my chanting. It's song-like, it's varied in vocal depth. And I just want to acknowledge that you may have heard mantras chanted in a monotone or with a different cadence or inflection elsewhere. And so this version is how the energy is being extended, okay, from my lineage to you through me. And there's power in that. So I invite you to try it as recorded and see how it feels. And then once you know the mantra, feel free to practice it on your own, okay? And you will come to a pace and a cadence that it calls you to. And I would say, let the call of your heart sing that chant. Let it be yours. So how to chant a mantra. Mantras can be chanted out loud, they can be chanted silently, or actually they can be whispered also. I recommend chanting out loud at least a few times at first. I find that it's the easiest way to not think about anything else is when you're chanting out loud. So it helps you with that mind quieting piece. Chanting out loud also allows you to feel the vibration in your skull. It opens up the throat chakra, which really helps us be able to develop our own voice and discernment in speaking up. And it also, the tongue, and I don't know that much about the meridians in the mouth, to be honest, but the tongue is said to tap acupuncture or pressure point meridians actually in the mouth. So it relates, doing it orally or out loud actually relates back to how it has an impact on the physical and physiological body. I tend to chant in a whisper or silently only when I'm kind of called to naturally, when it feels like the right thing to do, and otherwise I chant out loud. So I invite you to play with it for yourself. And see what works for you. I also have had clients who, they're chanting at work in their office, or they've got all kinds of people in their house, and so they just want to keep it to themselves, or it's not a publicly appropriate place to be chanting out loud. And so silent is fine, and that's what I just tell them. Don't even worry about it. Silent. there's actually a line of thought and philosophy that the silent mantra actually penetrates you more deeply because energy is not going out through your mouth. It's actually sinking into you. So there's that. So try it. Working with divine energy in a mantra is like singing to a dearly beloved, okay? So you're not just like tap, 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 tapping away, okay? It's like, oh, I love this. I love this person. This is dear to me. So I invite you to bring that intention and also with it an awareness to the qualities of the mantra's energy in your chant. So in this first January through February mantra, there's a breath and a silent mantra. So it's a little bit different than usual, but certainly its qualities are balance. You know, the qualities of Shakti are movement and creation. The qualities of Shiva are stillness, silence, all-encompassing embrace. So we're balancing those two kind of forces in the season, in the year, and in ourselves. So really, you know, kind of an awareness of calm, centered balance. You can bring that into the practice, see how that impacts it. But just bringing that intention of singing to a beloved and that awareness of the qualities that you're invoking, inviting. How many times? Okay. All of the recordings, there are two times during this year that we're doing breath meditation with the mantra. In those instances, I'll time it, and our practice will be 5 minutes, just a flat 5 minutes. When there's a mantra, you have a choice about how many to chant. You can chant a repetition of 11, 27, 54, or 108. All of these are sacred numbers, and you know the number of repetitions that mantras have been chanted at for thousands of years. So there's a lot of potency to any one of those that you choose. The practice recordings will have a repetition of 108, okay, and that's counted out for you by me on my mala. So if you don't have a mala and you want to keep count, see how you do with the 108. If that's just too long, pick a period of time, and you don't have a mala, pick a period of time. Just say, I'm going to do this for 2 minutes, and time yourself for 2 minutes. Or 5 minutes, whatever works. So feel free to work up to the 108, chant what feels right, okay, or choose any length based on the time available to you in any day. Do not feel like if you don't have X amount of time, 10 minutes, that you can't do this. You could do it for one. This is your mantra in your practice. Sacred Sound Circle is really just a container to hold you and give you some structure in that, because one of the things that I hear most often is people don't feel like they have enough time for mantra or for meditation, and they don't Sorry for the pause. There's a little maintenance that needs to go on in the building today. So they were heading upstairs, and I wasn't quite sure how that would impact the recording. So this is your mantra practice, I was saying, and so make it your own. Okay. A full mala has 108 beads if you're looking for or into getting a mala. And a hand mala, which I don't know, it's about the size of your wrist. It's kind of like a really oversized bracelet. It has 27. So either of those are great. And as I said, in February, Sacred Sound Circle, we're going to have a mala designer with us for a workshop. So if you can hold out, she makes beautiful malas. And she'll let you know where and how and when those are available. She's got some in stock, and then I think she also still does custom. which would be totally fun, in my opinion. okay. Those are chanted mantras. We were just talking about how mantras can be spoken or they can be sung. Okay, so we went into chanting, which is the sung mantras. The mantra we're using right now through February 18th with the alternate nostril breath practice is spoken. And except for me guiding the practice, it's silent. So you'll experience it differently than you'll experience the sung mantras. I happen to think that it's calming and rhythmic. And it's intended that way to balance the irregular qualities of the winter season. So that is why we are doing it now. I find it very soothing and therapeutic, but I would love to hear what your experience is of it. Regardless of whether the mantra is spoken or sung, with all of the energies that the mantras use, that they invite and call upon in all of the practices, you are calling upon yourself. These divine energies are at least as internal as they are external. They exist inside you. The chant calls them out, fine-tunes them, and it makes them accessible to your everyday consciousness. Okay? So because it's calling them into you and from within you, I recommend opening up space within yourself for the sound through yoga or walking in nature, coloring, painting, dancing, really anything that makes your heart sing and nourishes your body is going to support you in this practice. So what if you have a yearly mantra and you are practicing the seasonal mantras in Sacred Sound Circle? Can you do both on the same day? This is called stacking mantras, and the answer is yes, as long as you feel okay. Okay, watch your energy. Watch what comes up for you. None of the mantras that we do in Sacred Sound Circle should have any contradictory or conflicting effects with any of the yearly mantras. Okay, but if there is a possibility of that, I will let you know when we begin practicing a seasonal practice. So how do you choose which mantra to do first, which mantra to do second? Does it matter? If you choose to stack mantras like this in the same day or the same practice in the same day, I recommend practicing the mantra that creates the stillest energy first and then moving into the mantra with the most dynamic energy. This also assumes that you're practicing either in the morning or in a part of the day in which you're going to move into other activities. If it's an evening practice, you might want to flip that so that you do the active, more active energy mantra first and the more calming or stilling energy mantra second. This also may be true if you're feeling really wound up as you head into your practice. Okay, you want to start where you are. Think about it that way. Let's start where I am and end up where I'm going. So if you're starting in a really agitated or active state, do the active one first and move to the one that creates more stillness. Okay, and then move out of the practice in a stiller, balanced state. If two mantras a day is too much, and some days it is, and, you know, honestly, it very well could be for a while if you're new to this practice. Okay, don't worry about that. There is absolutely no keep up in this, okay? Absolutely not. I've been chanting mantra for over 10 years now, Okay, so I do a lot of mantras at one time. I do a lot of breath practices and mantra at one time. And even so, there are days when it's too much to do two, or it's too much to do what I've been doing the several days before. So just watch that. It's all okay. But if there is a day, right, that if two mantras is just too much on that given day or just overall, alternatively, you know, you can ask yourself which mantra you want to practice each day. Say, what mantra do I want to practice today? And whatever comes up, do that one. This is a great way, actually, of familiarizing yourself with the energies of the mantras and how they impact you. So you, by doing that, by actually asking yourself, which one do I want to practice today, you are developing within yourself the ability to say, what do I need? And to say, okay, I'm going to pick up this tool and, like, witnessing and acting upon your intuition and your guidance to say, okay, I must need this, and then see how that feels. I think it's a great practice to ask which you want to practice each day. And so I'll leave you with that. Actually, I will leave you with two quotes that are not mine from others. One of whom is my guru, who is how I learned, or who I learned about mantra from. It is through her lineage that I came to love it. And the second is by an author, a yogi who studies myth and sound, and it's from her book. Okay, so the book first. This is a quote from Alana Kavalia, her book is Sacred Sound. Quote, these mantras mean business, and as such, they act as vibrational guideposts in our spiritual practice. Eventually, we stop chanting the mantra, and the mantra starts chanting us. And from Ma Jaya Sati Bhagavati, quote, at first, mantra is used as a tool to kill the mind. Then it is used as your connection to the divine source. Use your mantra to call God to you. Eventually, your mantra will enable you to become God. Every individual person has their personal connection to God through mantra. It is always there. Think of your mantra as a river that is always flowing. If you sit by that river that flows, you will hear your mantra very clearly. It is always there. So I will leave you with that. As you know, this workshop is part of my offering Sacred Sound Circle. If you'd like to experience using sacred sound to attune to the wisdom of the seasons and to deepen your connection with yourself through that, I invite you to join us. I'd love to have you. Go to ompreneur.com and click offerings in the top menu, and you'll see Sacred Sound Circle in the drop-down menu, and that will guide you on next steps and allow you to join us. So thank you for all for being here. I hope those of you who are not yet part of the circle will certainly join us. And those of you who are, I'm very grateful to be doing this with you. And I will speak with you soon. Namaste.